Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Thursday, we talk some USC football with Dan Weber, our beat writer and columnist over at USCFootball.com. Hope you guys enjoyed the Harvey Hyde show from yesterday. We're going to squeeze in one more before I'm going out of town again. So we're going to talk to Dan Weber today about the USC Trojan football team. You guys have already sent in a bunch of questions. If you want to send in more, podcast at USCFootball.com. That's our email address. Or you can call or text. Our number is 424-254-9141. You can leave a voicemail or send us a text, and we will read it or play it on the Peristyle Podcast. You want to subscribe? We're on iTunes, itunes.com/Peristyle Podcast, plus a lot of other podcasting hosting areas like Audio Boom and Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio and Google Play. So anyway, you want to download the podcast, we appreciate it. We just love that you're listening. We've been doing this. This will be our 10th football season. So thanks for staying with us. And for the new people, thanks for finding out about our little show and listening in. We do appreciate all of that. So we're going to talk with Dan Weber. We've got a couple weeks left of summer workouts. We got fall camp coming up at the end of the month. We got Pac-12 media days. It's almost here, Dan. It's almost time.
Yep. I was just noticing the SEC has media days starting early next week. And I think they're bringing 42 players to media day starting early next week. So the Pac-12 is never going to be in that place, and yet it just is amazing to think that college football is that close, and places like the SEC, you know, it's like that's all they got. I like when I think the July 26th, 27th date for the Pac-12 is about right, and I mean, still, you know, with USC starting practice or reporting the next day, starting the day after, you know, they're still going to be there for 5 weeks before the season, you know, first game kicks off, and then, you know, 12 straight weeks for the regular season without a bye. So that's plenty long. I don't think, you know, you needed to get it started any sooner. This is just about right.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is just about right. And it's coming around the corner. It's very close. And one of the other things that's very close before we jump into the rest of the show, Dan, I don't know if you've seen the flyover of the USC Village over at the, you know, across the street.
Yeah.
That's almost done. I think it's August when it's opening up, and it looks pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I think there are, for those of you who like to peruse the UCLA boards, they're probably guys throwing themselves off buildings with at the thought that they can't come after the University of South Central anymore. And what have you, because that University Village is so spectacular. I mean, there's nothing like it in college, in America. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, to be, you know, that close to, you know, one of the biggest, you know, cities, in, you know, in America, and one of the, you know, special places in the world, and yet to have that kind of a, you know, it's sort of a campus facility, but it's also, it's kind of its own place, and it's going to have, you know, restaurants and, you know, retail and libraries and, you know, classrooms and, you know, housing and all that. It's pretty amazing. It's just kind of hard to describe because you can't really compare it to something else because there's nothing else, you know, quite like it. So, you know, probably from the perspective, if you're a USC football coach doing some recruiting, you're pretty happy about what that University Village looks like.
For sure. The reason I bring it up, I looked in the flyover. I couldn't see our friends at Trader Joe's. There's going to be a new Trader Joe's there.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool. They're going to be opening, I think it's in August, which will celebrate their 50th year in business, their 50th year anniversary. But I couldn't see specifically there, but there's going to be a lot of retail there, and Trader Joe's is going to be among them. So we might try to do something special. We'll figure that out. Do a show from Trader Joe's or something. Cause they've been great to us with their sponsorship. And, we love I love it cause I go shopping there all the time. But it should be cool. But I want to see that. So I'm going to find out where they are in the new USC Village.
Yeah, we're going to have to take some time and walk through there. I mean, it's been something you drive by and you know it's there and it's coming and you see it, and you just think, wow, that's really, man, look at this. And now that it's almost here, it is kind of, it's like football season. it's almost here and it's kind of like, wow, that was quick.
Yeah. But we wanted to, before we jump in, I did want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's, because they've been great to us, like I said. Check it out. We did a lot of stuff on the 4th of July weekend, and that's where we started, Trader Joe's. A lot of specialty stuff, but if you don't go, if you haven't been there, a lot of basics like eggs and milk and butter, all the basics and stuff, too. They have great prices on all that. I love the beer and wine, the selections and stuff that they have there. They're free of GMOs, anything with Trader Joe's name on it. They don't make it with MSG. No artificial flavors or preservatives on the Trader Joe's products. So, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's healthy stuff and there's some really great tasting stuff there. So I love it. It's funny. We had Colin Cowherd on a couple weeks ago and I didn't really know, Dan, if Colin shopped at Trader Joe's, but turns out he does. So that was cool. We were talking about that a little bit on our show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, you get the thing I always liked was stuff that you don't see anywhere else. And then the wine selection and all that. And it's kind of a neat culture. The people that work there, are just interesting people. It just has there's something about it that's just different and, kind of neat to be involved with, Trader Joe's and have it kind of be a USC thing is pretty cool.
All right. Well, thanks again to Trader Joe's, and we'll let you know more about what's going on at the USC Village as that gets closer. It's getting counted down next month, so it's going to be here sooner than you know it. We got a bunch of questions, Dan, about the team, so I thought we'd just kind of jump in and talk about it. Tarek wants to know, there's a lot of quarterback talk recently. He wants to know, have you seen improvement in Jack Sears during the summer workout?
It's almost, since we're only getting to see him once a week, and we had the 2 weeks without Sam, so it was kind of an abbreviated, workout. So I don't know that we were getting, a true look. I will say this. One of the things you have seen this summer from Jack is that ability to just put it in gear and take off. And, he can fly. And so, I think that's the thing of all the things that we've seen from him. And both he and Matt Fink can run with the football and are not hesitant to do so. And then when you see Sam, and Sam is more of a run to be able to set up the pass, but not afraid to run. But, to have three quarterbacks, all of whom, will gladly tuck the ball away and take off with it is kind of like a little bit of an adjustment in your mindset to see that happen. And that's kind of neat to see it. But I think the summer workouts, and by the summer workouts, I'm talking about especially once they get into July, the end of July and they're in pads, I think are really important for Jack. And we'll see. I think one of those two has to end up as the, Jack or Matt as the backup. And you really got to have a designated backup. Although I think, if there were any kind of issue for long term, say with Sam, you'd have to probably drop Jalen Green into that mix. But on a, instantaneous during every game, and every basically week in the game plan, you really have to have the next guy in line who's ready to go. And, you would think Matt, he has the edge having, gone through, the full year and having that much, ahead of Jack. We'll see. I mean, Sam didn't get to take that red shirt off when he was a freshman. So, we'll just have to watch it and see how it develops. But Jack's speed is the thing you noticed, and the ability to just take off and not just, pick up a few yards, but the ability to beat people deep and beat some, very quick defensive backs and still, split them and get past them. And Jack can do that.
Tark also had a question about Oluwole Batiku. Could you see him being used as a third down specialist pass rusher this upcoming season?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Without a doubt. Yeah, they need to figure out some ways to get more pressure on the quarterback. And I think you'll see them doing some different things depending on, who they're playing and, what the tendencies are and all of that. But yeah, I think you will see that. Although, I think, with Porter and Uchenna and Connor and Oluwole, I don't, dismiss the thought that you can just have regular rotations as well with the two starters and then the two, backups who, if you call Oluwole and Connor Murphy backups. But I think they're going to be doing some things to get pressure. I was watching the Pac-12 Network yesterday, had some USC Rose Bowl, classic Rose Bowl game. And that's the thing you realize when you watched, I guess it was a USC 2003 against Michigan, and the ability to get to the quarterback really made a difference in that game. USC had so many different ways of getting to the big John Navarre kid from Michigan, and just didn't allow Michigan to really get their passing game going. And that was the missing element, I think, last year, was that inability to quite get anybody to the quarterback. And they really think I have to do that to be the kind of shutdown defensive team I think this team can be. But Oluwole probably going to be a part of that game plan that to get to the quarterback.
All right, let's move on to Jeremiah. He said, I was wondering, who should we expect to step up as the quote-unquote playmaker this year on defense? Previous years, we've had standouts like Leonard Williams, Sua Cravens, and Adoree Jackson step up to lead. I'm curious if you've seen any indicators of the next big defensive playmaker on the current roster. Thank you again for all you do. Fight on, from Jeremiah.
We don't want to jump anybody, and I think there are a lot of, guys that just like Cam Smith that go, go about their business, and people are now starting to say, that he's certainly an All-American candidate in the middle, and they're saying, that Iman Biggie Marshall, an All-American candidate at corner, and we just kind of expect them. I think, Iman becomes a little, more he's so competitive, but a little more confident in his ability to run with people and, play the ball and all that, and doesn't feel like he's got to grab people or, get quite as handsy. But I think Uchenna Nwosu will be a big play guy. And I think Jamel Cook, we seem to think that he's going to be maybe start out a corner. And he just, when you've got a 6'4" guy with his ability to stop and start and pursuit, his pursuit angles are very precise, and is, an aggressive, tough kid. But I might start with those two. Jamel and Uchenna would be guys that I think, just have that whatever you're looking for. And I think Porter Gustin, but I know people are looking, because, he's this, not quite 6'5", 270-pound, guy with muscles on his muscles, and a guy who's working like crazy on his flexibility, doing the yoga and all that. And I look at him as kind of a Devon Kennard guy who it took a little bit. He kept getting closer and closer. He, in his early years, he he didn't quite make the play. He was in the play, but he didn't quite make the play. I look at maybe Porter to be that kind of a guy this year, where he not only gets into the play but makes the play, kind of like, you know, the game he had at Washington. And physically, I think it was kind of a mismatch with, say, with Porter and Jake Browning, the Washington quarterback, where then you get into the game with Penn State, where you have Saquon Barkley, who's just so unbelievably talented physically, athletically, for Penn State, and Trace McSorley. That was a tough matchup for anybody. It is a tough matchup. But that's the one you want to see Porter get himself to the place where he can, you know, play people like that in the open field. And so those would be my candidates right there, to sort of the really breakout guys.
Well, thanks for that one, Jeremiah. Speaking of Jeremiah, Dan, a little screw up on my part. So Jarrett sent an email, and he said, this is for Daniel, if you have him in. And I categorize all the questions that come in a Google document, so I can, when I do the podcast, I know, okay, these are all for Dan, whatever. I put this in your category, Dan, but I believe he meant Daniel Jeremiah. But I think
Jeremiah.
Yeah,
okay.
We had him on last week, and Daniel would have loved to answer it, but
I understand Daniel went to the opening for the first time. Is that right?
He did. We were up there. They broadcast, NFL Network did, and I talked with him quite a while up there. And
he made a little. He sent, I guess, one of his little notes that he said was not to be surprised if Sam Darnold plays the next two seasons at USC. Now, that's got all USC fans' hearts fluttering like crazy. I mean, I think part of that is, if you're from the outside, you look at Sam and you realize, when you finally, you know, get to be around him and get to know him, he's not somebody who's just like dying to go to the NFL, or he's not somebody that, you know, college football isn't the be-all and end-all of what he's doing. And you realize, wow, this is the kind of kid that isn't going to sit around and wondering, you know, what are they saying about me on NFL.com or whatever. And I did like his comment about Sam. Daniel's comment about Sam was how down to earth he was, and how willing he was to, you know, ask people, and, you know, what can I do better, and how do I do this, and all that. I think he made a really good impression. Obviously, he made a good impression by breaking the all-time record on the quarterback, I guess the counselors who are quarterbacks, and they bring in, you know, some of the best college kids from all over the country, year after year, and he broke the all-time record in terms of the quarterback ranking. And we still don't know all of the things that were involved in what they do, for that competition. But it was nice to hear that Sam broke the all-time record.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And Daniel had some glowing things to say about him. You know, he's talking to some sources, and we'll see. There's a long way to go between now and the end of the season, and we'll figure out what, you know. I don't think he probably knows what he's going to do, so it's hard to say what he's going to do.
And I think the other thing is, I think the more you get around Sam, you realize he may not be somebody who, if all the NFL writers in the world, you know, organize and say, you have to turn pro, you have to go to the NFL, what are you thinking about? I'm not so sure Sam's the kind of guy that will be completely influenced by that kind of, you know, because, you know, the NFL machine does not want to get turned down by a guy who could be the number one pick. That will not be something that the guys whose whole life is the NFL will take, all that kindly. There's going to be a lot of pressure. But Sam could be the kind of person, I think he really is the kind of person, he doesn't care that much about that kind of pressure, that won't be, you know, a deciding factor for him. I just don't think it will.
It could be. I mean, my gut is it could be like an Andrew Luck situation, where he could have left, he came back, still had another year if he wanted to, but by that time it's like, all right, it's time to move on. So I could see that.
Yeah, I could see him. He's got 2 years after this year. He could split the difference, you know?
Yeah.
And you get a degree, you don't stay for the whole time, and yet you, you know, so technically, I guess you could say you're leaving early, but you, you get your degree and, you know, you give it everything out. That wouldn't be like the most shocking thing in the world. He'd be turning down a lot of, probably we would guess, you know, based on all the things that, that could certainly happen. He'd probably be turning down a lot of money, but, you know, it hasn't hurt Andrew Luck, I don't think.
No. He gets paid pretty well. I think he's like the second highest paid player in the NFL or something. So.
Yeah, and Carson Palmer, for example, when he went to Cincinnati, for some reason, they decided not to play him a play his first year, which nobody's ever really completely understood. So, you know, you don't always know what's going to happen and how it's all going to work out. So I think at that point you just say whatever you want to do, whatever is, you know, and it'll be interesting to see what Sam wants to do. I get a sense that Sam will do what Sam wants to do. It's one of the things that makes Sam Sam.
For sure. Well, anyway, so Jared's question, and we can answer it. He wanted to know, so for the USC team, he had three categories. Who are the best athletes? Who has the best football instincts? And the most exciting ceiling? I don't know about exciting ceiling.
The most exciting ceiling?
Yeah, so I got maybe
the highest ceiling. The highest ceiling?
I would guess that's what he meant. Yeah, so best athlete, who do you think the best athletes are?
Mm.
That's hard, you know, like.
Best athlete. It's interesting. There's so many different ways to look at it. For example, if you look at Jamal Cook at 6'4", and what he can do as a 6'4" kid, he's really a good athlete. I mean, he's just, you know, terrific, terrific athlete. I mean, there are ways you could look at, you know, Velus Jones and say, this kid, you know, between, you know, speed and quickness and strength and that sort of thing. I'm trying to think.
Like a Josh Metorbebe had like a 40-something inch vertical. Like you could say like that kind of athleticism.
I still remember watching that. I know they tested a new piece of equipment when he did it, and I was a little, you know, uncertain as to how reliable it was. But when you saw the video of it, you thought, daggone, he may have jumped. He may have gotten that high. And he absolutely, he's the least like, if you said who's got the highest vertical on this team, you would never pick Josh Emoto-Baby. I mean, it's just not going to happen. There are people who will tell you that Daniel Emoto-Baby at 245 pounds is the strongest guy on the team pound for pound. And so, you know, stronger than just doesn't know his own ability. And Wally Batuku, I mean, how athletic is he? He can do, you watch him walking on it, you know, doing handstands and walking on his hands, you know, at 6'3", 250 pounds.
Jalen Green being able to play multiple positions and stuff, you know.
There are a lot of good, I mean, they don't have that one guy who's like a 4.240 guy. So, but they got a lot of guys in that next group, who can fly. Jack Jones, who, when you see his summer photos now, he doesn't look a lot like the same Jack Jones of last year. He's just much more defined and ripped and you see a lot of guys who are, you know, kind of grown up over the last year. You do get the sense that the strength and conditioning is kicking in a way that we haven't seen it every year, and that may be just because of the number of really good athletes that were pretty young last year and where they can go. I mean, you look at Rasheem Green and, you know, and Porter Gustin, and you think, okay, those are really big guys who have muscles on top of their muscle. You know, they just have that, you know, that look about them. But I'm trying to think, who would...
You know, Jenny Harris, you might want to put in there. Like,
he played
corner, quarterback, hadn't played wide receiver since, you know, grade school, and then came in one summer and started killing it at wide receiver and then switched back. I mean, so he's definitely athletic.
Yeah, and he's been a corner and looks like he might be the slot guy this year. And he's had a lot of, you know, versatility. Trying to think who would be. And then, you know what? We tend to forget Sam Darnold. I mean, he was, you know, led Orange County rebounding. I used to, you know, watch Friday night high school basketball games, and he's a real you know, natural scrapper. I mean, he's just a guy that he could just play, play basketball. And that's a way to look, I think, at Susan Mote Athletic, is just to, who can play the other sports. And Sam certainly can. And so he'd be on my list too.
What about like football instincts? I kind of think of like a Cameron Smith or Uchenna
Nwosu. I think
Nwosu.
He would be my first call. I think you're right. Yep. I think Cameron just seems like he's got that sense about him, you know, where things are going to go, and he doesn't have to be in a big hurry because he kind of just has a feel for it. I think Uchenna also has got that real feel for, you know, where things are going and what you have to do to get there. And, I think the guy who's like the coach on the field to some extent is Chris Hawkins.
Yeah, I would have said him too.
Yeah, he's got those instincts. And
Sam Darnold.
You
gotta go Sam Darnold again,
Jalen Green. He hasn't seemed to get flustered no matter what they do with him. And has executed, and he made some, flanker, throwback plays where he's under a lot of pressure and he just seems to, be able to make the throw without any big deal. So that's probably where I would go, with those guys. We're probably not giving people, I'd say a Nico Fowler has a lot of, sense about him. It's one of the reasons he really likes playing center is you get a chance to be, the quarterback on the line of scrimmage. And he just has a real sense, I think, and a comfort level, with doing that. So those would be some of the ones that you think about off the top of your head.
I think like even a Sam Darnold, his instincts are spectacular, and Deontay Burnett maybe too. Like I think he has really good football instincts.
Who's that?
Deontay Burnett.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the ability to get yourself into the right place at the right time, at the right angle, to find that open space. And both Sam and Deontay can do that. I think that's one of the reasons they work so well as a combination. And I do agree with people who I agree with myself that was the best play of the year than anybody, best passing play of the year that tied the USC, tied Penn State in the Rose Bowl. And, that was two guys who both seemed to understand where it was going to open up in space. Not very much and not very long, but both had that ability to get away from where they had to get for just that much time. I mean, the thing I'm amazed with Sam is you don't see anybody catching him from behind. He just seems to have that ability to stay out of people's reach, and just the thought that he so seldom gets taken down by the first guy. And there were issues last year with some of the line of scrimmage blocking and guys getting through. And very seldom did that first guy take Sam down. And that's what, again, the Penn State coaches were just marveling at after the Rose Bowl. They did everything they could possibly do with an athletic, veteran, tough team. And no matter who they sent to Sam, they couldn't get him. And the thing about that and what makes that so special is once Sam beats that first guy, and a lot of quarterbacks, when they see that unprotected, unblocked guy coming at them, they kind of freeze or they, oh, my, what do I do now? With Sam, it's the opposite reaction. Sam looks at that and says, cool, I'll beat this guy. I'll turn upfield. I'll have my eyes downfield. This will give me and my receivers some extra time. And we'll be playing 11 on 10 because the 11th guy on defense, I've already beaten him. He's behind me. And it was just a whole different mindset with the way Sam's understanding of where he was in space and time in terms of how much time he had was amazing. I mean, it's just, you can't teach it. You can't coach it. you just got to figure out how to take advantage of it. And it'll be interesting to see what teams do this year to try to not let Sam do that. I mean, you think, gosh, should we be blitzing? Should we be trying to send somebody free? Because if they don't get him, USC immediately has the advantage. And that's what was so difficult to pick up in last August practice, because you don't go live. So therefore, very often, you know, the play stops when a defensive guy gets near the quarterback. But as it turned out, when it got to real games, that defensive guy never stopped the play. And you didn't ever get the benefit of knowing what you were going to get with Sam totally until you saw him in live action in real games. And I don't know how you would even be able to do that. You almost can't play live on the quarterback in practice. And yet, you can't see Sam for what he is unless you play live. Because, again, that first guy is not going to take Sam down.
And the last one was the most exciting ceiling. And to me, I'll just go like, okay, we know like Sam Darnold, you know, could be a first round pick, a number one pick or something like that. But maybe guys that aren't there yet that have a lot, you know, there's a lot more upside. Like a guy like Oluwole Patiku, who we haven't seen as much of, looks like the best player ever. So someone like that, I would probably put on that list.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in what Marlon Tuipulotu and Jay Tufele, I mean, we haven't seen him at all, Jay. What is their ceiling, you know, year one? I mean, I think they may have a chance to really be, you know, be a contributor, but I don't know. I think, you know, Jamel Cook, who knows what his ceiling is, but I think, you know, we may find out. And Jack Jones, maybe, as a return guy, and somebody who's going to get some offensive reps. I'll be real interested to see, you know, how they figure out how to get him the ball in space and how they do the same thing for, you know, Velus Jones to get him the ball in space. Because I think they're going to be more creative. I think they're going to take more advantage of all the things that Sam can do. And they're really going to try to create, you know, the kind of mismatches where they're going to have people, you know, going to be like long handoffs to flankers and things like that, where you don't have enough people to cover them. I think another guy, I think the tight end group as a whole, I'm excited about their ceiling as a group, the way they're going to, should be able to get mismatches against either linebackers or safeties. And the way Sam ought to be able to take advantage of that, you know, they've each got different, you know, skill sets, but, you know, you're talking about some pretty athletic, you know, guys can run, jump, catch it, real good size. And we'll see how this all works out. I mean, you know, we can say a whole lot of things about all of these, you know, answer all these questions. The players are going to answer the questions.
Yes.
And that's where the answers are. And they're going to come in and, you know, end of July, and they're going to start giving us a lot of these answers. But I mean, it's fun to speculate on all of this, but they've got enough guys that you think they're going to have enough answers. I mean, that's the key, is you have more answers than, you know, that opponent has. You know, his questions. You know, they're going to have to figure out how to stop this and this and this. And maybe it's Ronald Jones. There's a guy, Phil Steele, has him ranked as the number three running back in the nation, behind Barkley at Penn State, and I think the Darius Geis at LSU. Well, if Ronald Jones is the number three running back in the country, USC fans are going to be pretty happy about how this year is going to turn out. And he does do some things that you don't see anybody else do. So he's doing them at 205 pounds now. He's enough bigger. He's more Reggie Bush size at this point, and doesn't look like he's really lost anything. I mean, he hasn't lost anything. Maybe quicker and stronger with that little extra power. But he might be one whose ceiling it will be fun to to see where it actually, where it goes.
Well, thanks for that question, Jared. Sorry I didn't ask Daniel Jeremiah, but hopefully we did it justice for you. And we did this off the top of our head. We didn't do any research. So if we miss somebody, someone glaring obvious, email us and we'll talk about it on the next show. Got a question from Hawaii. It says, first off, love the podcast and all the great updated action on our Trojans. Well, thanks for that. So I've been a diehard fan the majority of my life. And I feel like USC has the greatest uniforms in college football, both in the past and present. Question to Dan. Do you know if USC might tweak their uniforms for a little bit for a game or two in the future? I do love the little changes to the helmet and face mask and also the jersey we had last year. Mahalo from Hinano, I believe you pronounce his name. So somewhere in Hawaii.
Okay. Hinano, I agree with you. I think the classic look is great. The no names on the back is great. The little tweaks, I think, have worked with the helmet. You probably don't want to get too much color on the white jersey, because I think the combination of the gold pants and the white jerseys, the road look with the Cardinal helmet, I think is the really good look. And I mean, as somebody who lived through the era of the Ronald McDonald shoes and the black socks, I get nervous when anybody says tweak with the uniforms. I think for Oregon that was fine, but if you're Maryland or somebody or Kentucky and you think people care about what combination of uniforms you're going to have today, I mean, I'll be honest, it's almost not fair, but I would happen to be perusing one of the UCLA websites, and I would guess that about, 200 out of the first 300 posts on one of the sites was about their new Under Armour uniform deal. And my thinking is, if you're posting to that extent about the new uniform deal, maybe it's going to be a long year. if you're saying, well, I really like the outline on the numbers, or could we get the numbers in a different font? I'm not sure I like that font. And I'm thinking, might want to start worrying about football and not, football uniforms. But I was taken back. It was just the other day. And I thought, wow, there's a lot of uniforms. And I don't mean, your question, because I do think USC fans really need to know that USC classic look. I mean, I think and I don't even say tweaked it. It's just been upgraded in a way that it looks as good as you can possibly make it look when you're doing the Cardinal and gold, and just the way everything works together. I think, to get back to the black shoes and the white socks and the white, shoelaces and all of that, it has both a classic look and an upgraded look, and you don't need to do a whole lot to it. You want people to not have to guess who you are when you come out on the field.
Dan, I'm not going to accuse you of anything here, but I feel that you probably emailed John and Brea and asked him to ask you this question, because it seems like a softball, that's something that you were going to love to rant about. I'm just kidding. But this is John's question. So he said, it seemed to me Lynn Swann should be settled into the job and ready to have an impact on the future of USC athletics. He's been in the position as one of the highest paid athletic administrative positions across the country for over 14 months now. In your opinion, what are the top three things Lynn Swann has accomplished so far as AD, and what are the top one or two things he should do when he gets to the office tomorrow? Thanks and fight on, John and Brad. I'm like, this is right up Dan's alley, so go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. We didn't overreact with Clay last year. I think that was the 1-3 Clay. He did not. I think he maybe was doing some due diligence to what if, what if, what if. But I think that was that was a really good thing, I think, at this point. I've asked a lot of people, and they, if you want a second thing, they tell me absolutely having enough money to do what they have to do is absolutely not a problem. And as I look at the numbers on the USC football staff, they're bringing in an analyst here and an analyst there and finding a job for someone whose 2 years are up as a grad assistant and, you know, who they want to keep on the staff and that kind of thing. That, you know, there were some questions earlier in the year about, you know, where the recruiting staff was going, but it seems to be in the ballpark. So I'm more encouraged there. And I know the coaches, I mean, Clay has told me that, yes, absolutely, you know, we are not, you know, hesitant to do, you know, to ask for what we need and to get it. So I think that's the second thing. Number three, I think I have three things I'd like him to do, though.
Let's do that. That's more, yeah.
three things I'd like him to do. Number one, I think they really got to start looking ahead. Well, number one, I think just because of the timing issue, I think it's the Coliseum. And I know if you're Lynn, you know, and you say, gosh, these decisions were made by people outside the athletic department, whether that was the way it should have been or not, and well before I got here, I'd like him to take a real serious look at that. I wouldn't mind if he were the guy who advocated to, President Nikias that he would be willing and maybe hoping that USC would bring in an outside architect or architects from, you know, maybe some with USC ties who work for some of the real leading architectural firms in sports stadium design to take a look at the plan. And so that would be my number one thing. Number two, I think, would be to take a serious look at the Pac-12 whole TV situation. And possibly does that bleed over into number three, which is the future of the Pac-12 and USC's place in it? Because I think by the time the 2023-24 season gets here, when the Pac-12 renegotiates, and you hate to, you know, you keep mentioning this, but between the time the Pac-12 started in 2012 with this new contract and finishes up in 2024, the Big Ten will have negotiated three contracts. And is anyone surprised that the Big Ten is so far ahead of USC, both in its, TV contract and its TV network, and, you know, is going to be producing something like $20 million per school more than the Pac-12 contract and network is producing for the Pac-12. So we can't keep waiting, you know, where, you know, you're being told by Pac-12 commissioner, you know, Larry Scott, that, well, someday this is all going to work out. Someday the fact that we kept our right, the Pac-12 held on to its tier three rights, for example, whereas, you know, Texas gets $15 million extra a year for the Longhorn Network, or Oklahoma gets $8 million a year, you know, for their rights, and where every single team in the Big 12 gets more money from their third-level rights. Those are the rights that are not the over-the-air ABC-type rights. They're not the cable rights, ESPN and Fox. It's the next level. And every single team in the Big 12 gets more money than the Pac-12 gets from the network. And, you know, should USC be – let's say USC has three games this year that they give to the Pac-12 network, and they've got 20 basketball games. Like last year, USC had 20 basketball games on the Pac-12 network. Well, what would those games be worth? If you took those games that are going to the Pac-12 network, football and basketball. And for the whole deal, USC is getting $1.5 million from the Pac-12 network. And I know people will say, yeah, but they're getting the, you know, volleyball and the, you know, water polo games and soccer games are on and blah, blah, blah. But really, how much would those games be worth to USC if they did what they did in the Big 12 and kept the rights and sold them and packaged them and sold them themselves? Now, obviously, the big deal is if USC does that, UCLA does that, Oregon State can't do that. So Oregon State now is getting the same amount from the TV contract and the same amount from the network, Pac-12 network, as USC is. In 2024, there is no possible way that's going to be the case. There's no way. I'm sorry. It isn't going to happen. And I think USC and Lynn, with his background with ABC Sports and all that, or I think it was ABC, or was it CBS now? I can't remember
He was ABC.
With his contacts in the business, I just think he's in a good place to help USC figure it out. And I think USC is going to have to do what's best for USC. And I don't think we even know because of the way games are going to be watched and distributed and packaged and sold. And, you know, where does, you know, Google and Netflix and Amazon and all those things come in the next 6 years? I don't think we have any idea. But I think those would be the things I'd be working on really big time. And to get back to the Coliseum, the other part of that Coliseum thing is I'd be looking at all the people who are going to have to be reseated next year and the year after if this goes through. And I'd be thinking those 9,000 people that are going to have to be reseated, and then everybody else who's going to have to be reseated as a result of those 9,000, and thinking, how are we going to make all those phone calls? And how do we, you know, come in a stadium, you know, that has so few sideline seats and take out 9,000 of them? And more than that, once we figure out how many seats are going to be going to have an obstructed view of the other end zone with that big building, I might start putting together a list of all the people that they're going to have to call and how they're going to handle that and say, maybe we don't want to do this. Maybe we need to figure out another way. So anyway, those would be my priorities, for Athletic Director Swan, because this is a great year. I mean, you're going into this year, USC is the only program in the country that has a preseason top 10 football and basketball program. I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, people are like, basketball? You know, really? And things are going great. But once they tear out those 9,000 seats from the Coliseum, you know, all the euphoria about this year, I think, has the potential to go away. And I wouldn't want to be involved in that if I were anybody at the top of the USC athletic department. I think I'd try to avoid I'd avoid that at all costs, and I think there are ways to do that, but I think you better get on them right away.
Yeah, there's a big softball one for you, Dan. Yeah,
yeah.
That was good. Well, the last few topics are about the athletic department outside of football too. So we'll hit on these pretty briefly, I think. But Paul in Vegas wants to know. I like Dan's idea of a women's softball team at USC. If there's lots of talent in Southern California. However, if he points out, there aren't enough baseball scholarships available for us to put a championship team on the field for the men. How does that inadequacy, translate to the women's team? Thanks, Paul in Vegas.
No, I think there's a couple of differences. One, I think the women are allowed more scholarships.
Yeah, a lot more.
And they don't need as many players. You know, you need minimum 25, probably 30 players to have a decent nationally competitive baseball program, and you get 11.7 scholarships. I think the women, for some reason, in my head, it's like 13 or whatever for softball. But softball, you basically need two pitchers. You know, you need nine other players and, you know, a couple of subs. So with softball, you basically, the allowable scholarship allows you to put together the full team. You don't have to be packaging up, you know, half scholarship here and a half scholarship there and all of that. The other advantage for USC is that every guy that plays college baseball thinks he's going to make it to the major leagues. And that's all they care about, mostly, you know. And there are so many programs in Southern California that you can get to the major leagues through that when the time comes and you say, well, do you want a half scholarship at USC and you pay $30,000 a year? Or do you want a half scholarship at UCLA or, you know, UC Irvine or wherever, and you pay $10,000 or whatever it would be. So it's so much more difficult for USC to get back to a competitive situation. It's not like Vanderbilt where there's nobody around that's competing for those players in Tennessee or Stanford where they can offer a full scholarship to any kid whose family income is under $100,000. Or Rice, where again, there's nobody competing in the metropolitan Houston area, or TCU, where they basically have, you know, wide open. If you want to be on a top program in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you go to TCU. But in Southern California, you've got so many other choices that it's darn near impossible for baseball, I think, under these circumstances to compete. And I wish USC, maybe that would be the third thing on Lynn's list, is figure out a way to try to get the rules changed in the NCAA for baseball scholarships and point out that what's happening now is they've almost made it impossible. There are almost no minorities playing college baseball because the opportunity, is better either to sign with a minor league, sign a minor league contract or play another sport. And so you do not see, they're pricing out minority athletes in college baseball. And I'd push hard to say to the NCAA, maybe this is, you know, one of those unforeseen consequences, but you really need to change the rules so kids can go, you know, to high school. And if they're really a great baseball player, you know, and every once in a while, you know, you have the kid, from Notre Dame, Ventura Notre Dame, that has 102 mile an hour fastball and was, second, I guess, in the major league, draft. But I think they're really being unfair, but because they want to, even out the scholarship numbers because of Title IX and football takes so many of those, the women's softball, has enough scholarships. And USC, I think, could be immediately nationally competitive in almost, second, third year. I mean, if you watch the NCAA, softball tournament, half the players on half the teams are from Southern California. I don't care if you're looking at Michigan or, Alabama or Oklahoma or whoever. And they start coming up to the plate one at a time and half of them are from Southern California. It's truly amazing. If you had your choice and when you're recruiting softball players, the degree from the university really matters because they're not looking to go play, major league softball somewhere. They really are looking for where's the best place for me to go to college. I think USC could be extremely competitive in terms of recruiting, softball players in Southern California. So I can't, push that idea hard enough. How good women's softball would be for USC.
Yeah, and they get 12 scholars. I thought they had more. It was my mistake.
12.
I think I had more. They get 12.
Still enough. I mean, basically, none of those teams have more than two really, serious pitchers. And you might have a third, but they never, they never get used. And then, you got the nine players in the field, and that's pretty much it. Yeah, you can pretty much do the job. The scholarship limit would not hurt a USC softball team anywhere near the way it hurts a USC baseball team.
Yeah. Wes in Chicago, another non-football question, said, I love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Wes. Utah's announced it will begin Division I men's lacrosse in 2019. I cannot believe Utah would make such a commitment without knowing other Pac-12 schools would add men's lacrosse. Do you think USC will add men's lacrosse? Thanks and fight on from Wes.
Well, I know that when USC added women's lacrosse, the theory was it would get USC to the East Coast for recruiting and to play games and just get them into, you know, schools where they produce lacrosse players, which also produced the kind of students that USC was looking for. So I've always heard that that was one of the, the thoughts behind USC going lacrosse. And is that one of the thought processes for, say, a Utah where they're looking to attract more students, you know, from the East? I mean, lacrosse is the fastest growing high school sport. I don't think there's any question about that. It's kind of a, you know, you look at it, they had the, I guess it was at the World Youth Lacrosse Tournament on over the weekend also from Denver. And it's kind of a yuppie, you know, sport. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of kids that when they introduce themselves, they all, you couldn't understand them that well because they all have braces. It's just, it's a sport that's coming on. I would not think it would be, Utah's doing some interesting things. They also have an intercollegiate, what's the word for it? They have, like the World of, you know, War and all those kind of games.
The esports, I guess. But
esports.
It's, yeah.
Well, they have an intercollegiate they started one this year at Utah. They have an intercollegiate esports team with scholarships. I don't know if USC is going that route either, because the more men's scholarships, you really got to figure out a way to balance it with the women. But I think Utah has decided they're going to probably do some different things to try to, you know, maybe get their student body more national, more, you know, get a more diverse, student body than you know, is available to them in Salt Lake City. So I wouldn't think you're going to see men's lacrosse at USC. Would not. I'd be surprised. I would think if I were USC and I had, as they said, which sport are you going to start? I think I'd start men's soccer. You got women's soccer, and you know the facilities and all of that are, you know, I mean, obviously USC's got women's lacrosse as well. I just think the men's soccer would be a little bit more, compatible, you know, with Southern California, and that would be the way I would go over lacrosse.
We got one from Dan, last one, Dan, class of 1962. He said, USC football will always be top tier, especially with Coach Helton at the helm. However, as a very old Trojan, I'm concerned about our total sports program. Coach Enfield is doing great with basketball, and some of the women's sports are terrific, along with men's water polo. The thing is that the successful sports at USC have in common is great coaching and recruiting numbers. This is not true for the spring sports, especially swimming and diving, track and field, and baseball. When is USC going to take the lead on increasing scholarship limitations for those sports? I don't like Title IX being used as an excuse, because we should be raising the scholarship limits for men's and women's sports. Why aren't we pushing the NCAA to allow universities to spend more on increased student scholarships instead of just coaches' salaries and facilities? At the very least, we need a minimum of 20 full scholarships in swimming and diving for both men and women, track and field for men and women, and for baseball. In fact, baseball should have 25, just like the minor league teams. Thanks for letting this old Trojan rant about this pet peeve. I'm proud that USC has more Olympic medal winners than any other university in the world and more countries, and most countries. Fight on, Dan, USC class of 1962.
And I can understand that, because it is kind of sad that the scholarship limitations have hit the two sports that USC had by far the greatest tradition in American college sports, in baseball and track and field. And that both of those have really been whacked by scholarship limitations. And that's a shame. And whether you could do it in all the sports, but I would like to see USC, that would be the second one, that both push the baseball and the track and field. I think USC would benefit greatly by pushing hard and making the point that you've really limited minority scholarship opportunities the way the NCAA has done this, and it's really unfair. And you know, something ought to change. I think it'd be great if USC took the lead there and said, you know, we're going to make the case that, you know, you're pricing out, you know, these minority kids from places like USC, and that's just not fair to USC, and it's not fair to those kids. And I think that's a really good point. I will say this though, USC just finished a year where they were almost number three in the nation in for the Learfield Sports Cup. They were 1 point behind Florida. Had Florida not won the NCAA baseball championship, USC would have been number three in the nation, behind Stanford. And for the life of me, I blank out on who's number two. But Stanford wins it every year because they, you know, have the ability to basically, you know, give everybody with less than $100,000 family income a full scholarship in all sports, all students. So it's not exactly, you know, and they've got whatever 30 sports at Stanford. But USC was, I think the USC women were number two in the nation. I think they compete for the Honda Cup. And then when you put the women and the men together, USC was a very close fourth and almost tied for third overall in best athletic programs in the nation. I know USC's women were significantly better than the men, or women at second. I think the men were in the top 15. But they're hanging in there in ways in which it's pretty difficult. I mean, for example, USC nationally has a far better track program right now than UCLA. But when they do the dual meet, there are so many events that where UCLA's walk-ons are just superior because USC runs out of bodies and they can't even, you know, enter people in some of the, you know, some of the events. So UCLA almost always wins, certainly in the men's, almost always wins the dual meet with USC with a far inferior track and field team. It's just the way the scholarships work, and I think that's a great idea for USC to be the somebody pushing hard to at least expand those scholarships and track and field. And that way you could do it for both men and women at the same time. The harder one is baseball, because then maybe you just say, look, you know, five more scholarships than baseball and softball and keep it comparable. That's how I'd like to see it go.
All right. Well, Dan, great stuff, man. Off season, nothing like really exciting going on, and we still talk for over an hour about USC football. So,
Well, those are some good questions, and those are some interesting points. I think that I do think USC has a chance to maybe be a leader and pushing some of these, you know, things that take care of the unintended consequences of some of these scholarship limitations. I mean, it's a shame that you don't see. I mean, there were more minority umpires in the College World Series last week at Omaha than there were players. Well, that's crazy.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's just crazy. But that's where college baseball has gone. I mean, and there just aren't, you know, enough scholarships to attract, you know, kids when they're younger to stay with baseball. So, I mean, here's in the town that, you know, where Jackie Robinson came out of UCLA, and to not, you know, have that opportunity for so many of, you know, so many of those kids is really kind of a shame.
All right. Well, that's Dan Weber. You can follow him, all of his stories and columns up on uscfootball.com, on Twitter too. It's at Dan Weber 3440, at dweber 3440, right?
Yep.
Yeah. At dweber 3440. He likes to tweet out interesting take, so check that out. You can follow me at Inside Troy. But Dan, thanks so much for coming on and talking some USC football with us.
Very much enjoyed it. Thanks for all the good questions, guys.
All right. That's Dan Weber. Check him out on the site, uscfootball.com. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.